I'm Jeremy Bullock, and you're listening to Travelling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 13, wherein, unlike the Doctor, this is not our last regeneration. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
Welcome to Traveling the Vortex.
I suppose we should hope that it's not our last regeneration. It could be canceled tomorrow.
Well, we decide that, so...
Well, we've granted ourselves another 13 lives. So.
Yes.
We'd like to announce we've been extended for season two.
Well, we had quite an eventful weekend.
We did.
We went up to Planet Comic Con, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, but...
Well, let's get out of the way now. Let's talk about it.
It was awesome.
It was.
It was really cool.
It was a lot of fun. For anybody that doesn't know, that's the premier comic book convention in Kansas City, Kansas... Overland Park, Kansas.
No, it is in Overland Park.
So Overland Park, Kansas. So Kansas City area, Kansas City metro area. And we all traveled over there on Saturday. The con was actually yesterday and today, but we went over Saturday and looked
for
at...
those not in the present time, that's Saturday and Sunday.
What did I say?
Yesterday and today.
Oh, yeah, yesterday and today. Yeah. As we're recording this on Sunday. Yeah, good point. but anyway, yeah, so we visited that, and we all had a good time. And
a lot of people showed up.
Wow.
Very, very packed.
Sean and I went last year, and it was, I mean, I think it was at least three times the amount of people there
easily.
This year. Yeah. So it's really growing, and I like that. I mean, I like the fact that it's getting some attention.
Well, and we got some rather big names were there this year. Lindsay Wagner, the original Bionic Woman. Elena Huffman from Stargate Universe in Smallville. Mm-hmm. Tom Kane.
Voice of Yoda on... Clone Wars.
And he's done a whole lot of other voice work.
Yeah.
Daniel Logan, the young Boba Fett, and Jeremy Bullock, the original Boba Fett.
And as we realized about con time when we got there, he's also been in a couple of Doctor Who stories. He was in the Space Museum with William Hartnell, and he was in, well, I don't know how much he was in it with William Hartnell, because apparently Hartnell's only in one episode of that, because he was on holiday, but again.
Did he go back to Spain?
And then, of course, he was in the Tom Pertwee Santarin story, which was The Time Warrior.
Which Mel got an autograph with him of him and Pertwee. Because he had one of those pictures.
Oh, you're kidding me. I didn't know that.
I was going to ask you.
Oh, my gosh.
You came back and you were all talking about it and you got your Boba Fett picture. And then we get up there in line and Mel's talking. I mean, first of all, he's a very nice guy. He's gracious. He's kind. And you know, we get a photo and he turns and we're all wearing our Doctor Who shirts.
Yeah.
So Mel's got her T-Furry shirt with the Dalek.
Why didn't you guys get in line with me?
I wish I had.
Gosh darn it.
I really wish I had, because that would have made so much more sense. Especially if I'd have known I was going to have to wait an hour and a half.
Is that how long?
Yeah, but he had to wait twice.
If you'd gotten in after me, you'd have had about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So we just...
But I was wandering around the entire time while you were in line.
Because you were waiting on me. Yeah. I mean... So we get up there, and he instantly looks at Mel's shirt and starts going, dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun. And she starts laughing. She goes, I'm flattered. I really am, but he's here for you. I'm just kind of here with him. And he's like, oh, okay. So we start talking to him for just a little bit, and then, you know, we get the picture taken, and they kind of shuffled us off to get the next person.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at the autograph, because I haven't seen any of the pictures. I have no idea what he's got out there.
Right.
Okay, here's Boba Fett, here's Boba Fett, here's Boba Fett, here's Boba Fett. Ah! there's a John Pertwee with
It was right there in the corner.
And I was like, I want that one. So we both got...
Oh, that's terrific. I wish I'd have known that. I actually got a Boba Fett one. Of course, my first love has always been Star Wars.
And I wavered. I looked at that, and because Mel's getting it, I felt a little more justified getting the Boba Fett. Because, I mean, he's Boba Fett.
He is Boba Fett.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just...
That's his best-known role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did the same thing when Walter Koenig came. I really wanted to get a Bester picture from Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. I had to get Chekhov from Star Trek, because that's who he is to me.
Yeah.
So I felt justified with the Boba Fett. But, yeah, Mel got the Pertwee one, and it's very cool.
Very cool.
It's
that
very
awesome.
Nifty. And he signed it as Hal the Archer.
Oh, excellent. Very good. Well, that's a lot. That's really cool.
I wish I'd gotten back in line
with you guys. That would have been very cool.
Well, and there were
a lot of costumes.
Yeah.
And there were actually two doctors.
That we saw. Now, I was told there were four total this weekend. But, yeah, we only saw two.
Two tenth doctors. Both very good costumes. Got pictures of both of them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay, I need copies of
that. Keith's
got
to start posting some stuff online if he hasn't already. I haven't checked your Facebook.
I have a whole slew of pictures on my camera still that I plan on working on this weekend and didn't get to. But I will get them up. If for nothing else, and because while the line for Boba Fett or for Jeremy Bullock was behind the curtain.
Yes.
Which, don't you find it odd that that's empty space?
Yeah.
Well, here's they widen the aisles a little bit.
This
by
is one
up
of,
some of that.
Here's especially one of the things that happened, though. You remember last year they had Lou Ferrigno and I mean some big names. Helen Slater. You know. You walked up to the table and only stood behind about seven people before you got up there. This is the longest line I ever saw with seven people for any autographs. And that was because of the lower numbers of attendance. This was the first year that they had a person that had a line that literally went hour long.
Lindsay Wagner. Or
Wagner's was long as well.
Really long lines, too.
Yeah, I didn't stand in Wagner's line. I wasn't down there for very long. But that's what happened. As a matter of fact, I got cut off the first time I was waiting for Bullock because he and Daniel Logan had to go do the Boba Fett panel. And they cut us right in front of us. And so I had to wait until afterwards. Well, when I came back, I ended up waiting about 45 minutes. But as I was waiting in that line, they cut the line two people behind me. And that's when they took it around the curtain because there were so many people in that center aisle waiting.
That
and
they
people
couldn't
could
get,
not get through.
They couldn't get to Daniel Logan. They couldn't get to Tom Kane.
They couldn't get to... The other celebrities that were there. So.
Well, we were standing there waiting, and Billy came back, Mel's son, and he was just kind of standing there. And I looked over, and there was just this whole cluster of guys in Mandalorian armor standing around this table. I said, Billy, go over there and ask them if they'll pose for a group photo. You got like 900 Boba Fetts there. Go get a picture. So he goes over. Well, apparently, it was group photo time, because right after he tapped the guy on the shoulder, Mandalorians came out of the woodwork. Every single one of them that was at this con showed up for this photo, and he got pictures of them, and all in costume with the buckets off, and they put all the helmets on the floor, and dog tags, and so, I mean, it was cool. Yeah. It was really cool neat. Just to see that this many of them picture. Gathered.
Well, you know, those were a lot of guys from the 501st, and I know that they were kind of quasi-sponsoring that because they had their banners and stuff up there right next to Bullock's booth. So, and I've seen them do that with, like, David Prowse, where they'll have, you know, him in the center, and they'll line up all the Stormtroopers and Vaders and, you know, the entire Imperial Army. So I wish I could have seen the photo op with the
I have pictures.
Oh, good. Because I'd like to see that. Yeah.
One of the things that I've decided for costume ideas, I really like the idea of the Mandalorians because... it's so customizable. Mm-hmm. It's so personal. You can make it any color you want. You can put any attachments on it. It can look
You can modify
little...
the helmet however you
exactly.
want. As long
it
as
can
the,
look a little different.
The eyepiece.
But as long as that T visor is on there, you're golden. You're in the club. Yeah, as opposed to a Star Trek outfit, which it's a uniform. You can change your insignia, but that's about it.
Even the Stormtrooper, you can't really do much.
Yeah, you
to
can't
that.
Customize Stormtrooper armor. So doctors are kind of the same way.
But you see some customizable. It just doesn't seem, it's not right.
Yeah,
no,
just,
with the Mandalorian armor.
Yeah,
right.
But with the Mandalorian, you can get away with it. So.
But
I think that's really cool. But yeah, it was a good con.
It was a very good con. I was very impressed. And I went to the Boba Fett panel, and that was a lot of fun. We left about, my daughter came with us, my 7-year-old, and she got a little restless in it. But they got to a point where they were kind of restating things they'd already said at the beginning of the panel. So we left it about 45 minutes into it. But it was interesting. Those guys.
And you didn't ask
fun.
Him what it was like to work on Doctor Who?
You know, I didn't. But, well, that's where I picked up on the Doctor Who comment, because they said, well, you've been in Doctor Who. And I thought, wait a minute. He's been a Doctor Who? And I thought, wait a minute.
Smartphone!
Yeah, so I started looking, and I was like, oh, that's... And I totally remembered as soon as I saw Time Warrior. I was like, oh, yeah. But the first one that came up was Space Museum, and I've seen Space Museum, but I guess it didn't register with me who he was in that. It wasn't until I remembered the Archer in Time Warrior, and I went, oh, yeah, he's so in that. And ironically enough, we had talked about watching that on all as a group on Friday night. We didn't end up doing it, but... That would have been cool if we'd watched that the night before we went to the con.
Would
have taken our disc and got it. Well,
do you think
I don't
have registered that?
Well,
or we've got to the con and gone, oh!
Well, we probably would have seen his name in the credits.
That's true.
And been like, oh!
Yeah, because Glenn makes us watch credits.
Oh, absolutely.
When we watch Doctor Who.
You have to let the credits roll to the end, and you have to start the credit. You have to go through the credit roll from the beginning, too.
Next year, before Planet Comic Con, I propose we don't have a Doctor Who night, so I'm not up until 3 o'clock in the morning, and then have to get up at 8 o'clock.
Why are you up till 3? I got home at like 2:30, or no, like 2:15, actually.
I couldn't get to sleep once
Okay. Yours is still a little wired.
Yes.
It was because the episode we watched was so awesome.
That's right.
Yeah, we have started some of our viewing for our Sarah Jane companion
Chronicles.
It's been used.
Has it been used?
Yeah, I saw your post that you liked that, but yeah, I think we're going to have to call it Companion Archives, because Companion Chronicles is, I think that's a name of a podcast out there, the Companion Chronicles.
Is it? Maybe it is.
Might be. I don't remember. Something like that.
You know I'm not good with.
I know it's out there in some form.
That's
so
all I do. So.
We're going to have to say Companion Archives, but that's okay. It goes along with our Adversary Archives.
That's right.
You liked the CC alliteration.
I did like it. I'm a big alliteration fan.
That's all right. But anyway, so yeah, Planet Comic Con was great, and we all had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. Next year, I think I'm going to try to dress up as a doctor.
Oh, you could pull it off. You totally could.
I don't. Depending on what my hair looks like.
Yeah, it'll you'll be have to grow the emo hair out. And,
it'll be either 11 or 10, depending on what my hair is like at the time.
Well, we could shave your head and you could be 9.
That's too simple.
And nobody would recognize you.
I have the entire wardrobe. For 9. I even have a V-neck black shirt I could wear under a leather jacket.
Oh, see, there you go.
I suppose I could start working on compiling Tom Baker's outfit.
Oh,
I have
the scarf. You got the scarf.
You got the scarf. You got the hat.
I have a hat. It needs some work.
May need to get a wig.
No, my hair naturally looks like that.
He's got to grow it out. So where do you guys are deciding to cosplay next year? I'll leave that up to you guys. That's not my thing. So.
I want to build a Dalek, Glenn. That's what I want.
Well,
that
would be fine.
That's my costume for next year.
A life-size Dalek. I'm fine with it.
I don't want to be in it, though. I'm fine with taking one. I don't want to be in it. So.
I would totally be in it. Suction cup photos off people's tables.
Will you autograph this? Autograph. Autograph.
so many potential things there.
And, well, let's move on along
we
to...
We chase R2s across the convention hall floor.
Well, we need K-9 for that.
That's right. Anyway, let's move on to feedback. I think we've dwelled on cosplaying and Comic-Con. Anyway, first bit of email that we got this week was on our discussion about the Marmite experiment last week.
Marmite.
How everything that transpired with that. And Mark Lee writes in this week, he writes, "I just thought I'd send you a quick message regarding your hilarious Marmite comments. To be honest, I don't know how anyone in the UK who likes Marmite, my dog wouldn't even eat it, and he puts everything except for brains, of course, so... I'm safe, or he eats anything except for brains, of course, so I'm safe from a zombie apocalypse you mentioned. To cut a long story short, Marmite is the remains of exploded slitheen. You can put the rest of it to good use to stuff your slitheen plushie." So he suggests using the rest of it to stuff our slitheen plushie that Sarah's been charged to knit for us.
You might be able to use it as glue, too.
Glue?
Yeah. It's very sticky.
It's very thick and gummy.
Why would you want to?
No, I...
Because I imagine then it would smell when it dries.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just even the smell as it's drying would just be,
That would be fairly... You could show up in a Slitheen costume and people would go, "Is that Marmite?"
Of course, Mark and Alex, who I'm going to read an email from as well... are friends of the show, and they both work on Doctor Who Reincarnated.
Yes.
And we've featured some of their comments before. Alex writes to us, "Hi there again, guys. Alex here. I've just been listening to your newest episode, and there were a lot of things I found interesting in there. First off, Marmite. Just to let you know that not all Brits like Marmite. Their slogan is, love it or hate it, after all. And you guys am definitely in the latter category." I see what he's saying there. "As for trying new British foods on the podcast, how about fish fingers and custard?"
I think that's great.
It's not a bad idea.
We should do that for the series premiere.
There you go. "It was first invented in Leedsworth, after all."
The Marmite or the fish fingers and custard?
No, the fish finger custard. Okay.
That's a real thing?
Well, it was invented in... Doctor Who. Didn't she live in Leedsworth?
Yeah,
that was the title.
I didn't know if it was a prepackaged thing.
No, I think that's where he's coming from. Okay. The doctor invented it, and Amy invented it in
I'd be willing to try it. I just didn't know if, you know.
I've looked for custard in town and haven't been able to find it, so we might have to do a little searching.
Yeah, because we aren't going to go dipping yogurt.
Yeah, because I tried to make tiramisu one time and couldn't find custard.
No custard?
I had to make my own custard.
Isn't it pudding?
No.
No. Not
it's
exactly.
It's like a mix between pudding and yogurt.
Yeah.
Wow, this sounds stellar. I cannot wait for fish fingers and custard night on the podcast.
Vanilla pudding and vanilla yogurt.
Alex goes on to say, it's the perfect Doctor Who meal, I presume, as I've never tried it. As for the Sarah Jane stories, I think the two you definitely need to watch are Time Warrior and The Hand of Fear. I think if Keith sees her first and last stories, he might be able to better understand the character's perspective when he watches School Reunion. If you have time for other stories, I'd say you watch Robot as well. Tick, we got one down.
Just spoil it there.
Since this is Keith's first time seeing the Tom Baker, it makes sense to watch Baker's first episode. That's what we said. And if you could just squeeze in one more suggestion, would you consider watching The Pyramids of Mars? That's one of my favorite Tom Bakers. I've only watched that one very recently, and I'd be very interested to hear what you had to say about it. And then he signs it, your number one fan, but apparently not anymore, though. Curse you, Chrissy. Alex Smith, a.k.a. Freaky Alex.
I'm really sorry about the Freaky Alex guy. Just for the record.
He's clearly taking it in stride.
I'm glad he is. But
he signs everything Freaky Alex. I love that. So.
Well, since Chrissy didn't send any feedback.
She didn't. Alex,
that
I think
Alex
he, yep.
has reclaimed the crown.
He has
and in fairness, Chrissy's a little devastated by the implosion of her NCAA bracket.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This weekend, which was not a good thing if you're in Kansas, because the Jayhawks didn't show up for their game.
I'm not sure what happened there. Yeah,
they lost.
You didn't know they lost?
Oh, I thought you meant they actually, like, literally didn't show up.
No, but that would be even better. Where are the Jayhawks? Well, they didn't even bother to come to the stadium today.
Her team got knocked out early, and so she was rooting for them. And we've kind of been tweeting back and forth, because I was rooting for them, not so much anymore.
Well, we can't.
It's only the third Final Four in the history of the tournament that not have a number one seed in it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's right, because a lot of the first seeds got knocked out even earlier than Kansas. So. That's about the extent I know about NCAA basketball.
Yeah, that's it. We're traveling a bit off topic now.
I don't follow it, so. I filled out a bracket, gave my $5, and said, okay, let me know when it's all over.
I figured I wouldn't throw the $5 away and put it towards some Doctor Who stuff.
One year I just sat down and guessed, because I don't follow NCAA. I don't follow any basketball. I just sat down and guessed, and I put my $5 in because I thought, oh, I'll be included. And I won the whole shebang. So I thought, it's $5 and a chance. I go to the casino and drop more than that. So,
but is that how you do your Oscars? Your Oscar picks are done the same way, aren't they?
My Oscar picks, that's research. Yeah. Now,
I
follow the Oscar season like most people follow NCAA basketball and make their brackets. Bracketology is applied for my Oscar picks, but anyway. If you want to send us feedback, you can contact us at our email address.
Which is travelingthevortex@gmail.com. You can also reach our Google Voice number. This is correct now?
It is correct now.
At 913-890-3025.
I have to say, interject, it wasn't until last week when I went to a different website where our Google voicemail is housed, and to get the number for the show, if everybody remembers me making the comment that I did a roundabout way. It was a good thing we didn't go to our website, because I found out later that our website had numbers transposed, so the number's been wrong on there. So if anybody's tried to call the number referenced on our blog spot, that number is incorrect, but it has been updated. So
please call back.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've been trying to call, or you've left a message on somebody else's Google mail, and they're wondering who the heck you are.
It's our professionalism, I love.
And you're wondering why you haven't heard your voicemail on the podcast.
Yeah,
yeah, we're not ignoring you.
It might be because it didn't go through.
Oh, God, maybe all the people with bad feedback called the wrong number. And we've been touting how great we are. And they're like, no, you're not, you suck.
They just won't play my email, my voicemail, because it's bad.
I'm okay with that. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/travelingthevortex and on Twitter at twitter.com/travelvortex.
And you can follow each of us individually on Twitter. Those addresses are, Keith goes by @VortexKeith. Sean goes by at Vortex Sean. It's real original Sean. And I go by at Glenn underscore Bartlett. That's Glenn with two N's, Bartlett with two T's. Well, three T's technically, but anyway.
Why you gotta be confusing.
Yeah, I know. And for any of that information, go to our Blogspot page, which is travelingthevortex.blogspot.com. And all of that stuff. Like a Yahoo commercial. .com. Anyway, so.
So there were a couple of big... I guess Torchwood was the big thing.
Yeah, well, no, the big thing is the
prequel.
That's the big thing. But now, yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll start. Were there two parts?
I heard there were going to be two prequels, and I'll be honest, I haven't.
Maybe there's one to be released later.
Yeah, there might be one next Friday.
Oh,
well, that's released this Friday.
It did release on the past Friday. Yeah,
yeah, it'd be the next Friday.
On the 25th is when it released. So I don't know. I didn't know anything about two. I knew that they were doing one, so.
Well, the official website just has the one listed, so yeah, maybe I'm incorrect.
I never heard that there were going to be two.
I mean, there were for two the Red teaser.
Day, there were two Red Day specials. You're not getting that confused with.
No.
Maybe okay. It was the fact that there was a teaser for the prequel.
That could be.
Yeah, well, there maybe was a teaser. There were two teasers for the prequel, actually. There was one played like a day or two before that, and then there was another one, and it was kind of split up. The one that was a preview. Before the teaser actually looks like a shot. It's a teaser for the first episode, and then there was a teaser for the prequel. So yeah, there were two of those released this week as well, or last week as well. So
what did you think of the prequel?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was it for as short as it is. I mean, it's what, less than a minute in it, isn't it? Or
it's
maybe
like
a
two,
little more than
it's
a minute.
Two, it's
oh,
two
it's
minutes.
2 minutes. Okay, well, it didn't seem like that, but
well,
for
I think
as short
with the
as
opening
it is,
and closing.
It gets a lot of just not information in there, but it gets a lot of intrigue in just that little time. With presumably that's Richard Nixon on the phone talking to some little girl that's warning him that there's monsters in the White House. I thought that was neat.
It was really very neat. I agree. It doesn't get me as excited as the Red Nose Day stuff for series 6 because the Doctor wasn't it.
Right,
so
exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
That could be Doctor Who, it could not be. I mean, it didn't disappoint me, but it wasn't like, oh, wow, no, I really can't wait. I mean,
it kind of reminded me of a pre-title sequence though, you know.
Yeah,
you
it
don't
really
get,
did.
You don't get the Doctor, you don't get, you know, just, you know.
Which it wouldn't surprise me if that was actually part of it and they just called it a prequel and released it early. And then we'll see it again, because it felt so much like a pre-title sequence.
Seems like they need to use that to kind of set the episode up again anyway. Yeah.
Don't care. I loved it. I was excited. More stuff.
More Doctor Who.
Bring it.
Absolutely. So we were all excited about it.
Yes.
One of the greatest. And then the other bit of news this week was that Torchwood Miracle Day now has a start date and poster in the United States.
And isn't it a cool poster?
It is a very neat poster.
Very neat. It's a bomb, one of those cherry-type bombs, the fuse on the top, and it's the world. That's really cool.
And the fuse is lit. The
fuse is lit. And it says a Starz original series, which there's no BBC at all on here, which I think is
which
weird.
Which must be the U.S.
Yeah, this
poster.
Is definitely the U.S. poster. And then, of course, it says, well, it's definitely the U.S. poster because the month is before the date. So
yeah.
That's how you get key on that. But 7-8-11, so July 8th of 2011. So
now, that's the U.S.
That
release.
That's the U.S. release.
So we haven't seen a BBC one.
I don't believe we've
one.
Seen anyone. And I think, you know, BBC Worldwide and BBC Wales, I believe, are in conjunction with that. So they're probably handling that
which
on
is
their
a,
end. So.
Does it worry you guys that it's a Friday?
A little bit, because shows
Friday's
don't typically do well for
in
shows
America.
in the United States. So,
but it is Starz, and I think it has a better chance.
Yeah, probably
because Spartacus aired on Fridays, and
it's two seasons in, and they're
it's
starting a new one.
It's going to start its second season, technically.
No, it's. It has a prequel season, so that's technically the second season, and then
prequel miniseries in a way.
Well,
yeah,
that's true.
Because it was only like 4 or 5 episodes.
Oh, is that all? I thought it was. Oh, I thought it was 8.
No, it was like maybe six at the most. So it would be like the Battlestar Galactica movie before the series started.
Oh, okay.
So it's something like that.
So technically, it's not in its second season.
Are you talking about the original Battlestar Galactica movie or the new Battlestar Galactica miniseries?
I'm talking about the Ronald D. Moore reboot series.
Okay, that's a miniseries, not a movie.
Well,
he said
that was my point.
Oh, but if you say movie, you mean original BSG.
Anyways.
So we're excited about Miracle Day.
Yay, Miracle Day. Yeah, I don't know when we're going to get Torchwood worked in with the schedule set up before the third one's, you know.
Well, we may have to just... Well, we're going on hiatus, though, in between... over the summer.
Well, depending on how this is 10 episodes,
I don't know how that will sandwich between the two parts of this season of Series 6. So. Yeah.
And we haven't figured out how we're going to cover Torchwood and all that, so we need to figure all that out. And once we figure it out, we will let you know.
Well, we've got a lot of catching up for Keith to do on Torchwood, too, so that may be something we push down the road, just to be safe. Sean and I just may be watching Miracle Day on our own.
And I'll leave the room, and you guys can talk about it for a little bit, and then
that's
I can come back.
Not a bad idea. We can do many reviews. Yeah. We can do many reviews, and then after Keith has caught completely up, then we can go back and kind of review.
We can leave him completely behind.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I like it.
I think when Season 5 starts, because this is Season 4, right?
This is Season 4, is this, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and then technically Season 4.
I can get caught up in time for next year for Season 5, and we can go back and watch
there
Miracle
you go.
Day. And
Glenn and I will be traveling the Vortex, and you'll be hanging tenaciously on the outside of the TARDIS, banging on the door. Are you done yet?
I'll be in the swimming pool in the library while you guys talk about Torchwood.
We don't know that the swimming pool's in the library.
Well,
the TARDIS regrew itself, or regenerated itself.
Who said which version of the TARDIS we're in?
Well, that's true. We could be in any one. Anyway.
Depending on what week it is.
Well, let's get into...
We're going to launch into David Tennant's
David Tennant.
Speaking of... new things.
I don't see how he could be anybody's doctor.
Yeah, I really don't see how he could either. Tom Baker either. I mean, really.
Love you, Sarah.
Here comes the hate mail.
I'd like to point out that Sean originally said that, not me.
This time. Not originally, originally.
Hey, I never said it originally.
That's still up for debate.
All right, first one. Christmas Invasion. Well, wait. We should talk about
start with
Children
in
Need.
Yeah.
There is no synopsis.
No synopsis.
No synopsis.
So Children in Need was a very interesting. I was kind of surprised that it wasn't part of the actual episode because it seems so vital to have seen that of continuation of that regeneration scene and the after effects of how they wind up at Earth on Christmas.
Now, for those of you that may not know this, there was a Children in Need special that was done prior to the start of the David Tennant series, which bridged the gap. It showed Eccleston regenerating into David Tennant, and then we got probably, what, it was about 2 minutes worth of...
Oh, it was more like 5 minutes.
Oh, was it five?
Long.
Okay.
Well,
you know, 4 or 5 minutes worth,
right,
of,
yeah.
worth of stuff with him in the TARDIS before he collapses, and then the true... Christmas Invasion episode starts with the ship landing and Rose getting him up to bed and to recoup. But this was kind of a little sandwiched in between there, mm-hmm. special, which I didn't know about until, I think he told me about
yeah.
it, actually.
Well, I was the same way. I watched the finale, Parting the Ways, and then later watched the Christmas Invasion and missed the Children in Need regeneration special. Didn't know it happened. And I didn't lose anything not having seen it.
I almost think I would have.
It expounds, but it's not necessary. It's not necessary. That's why I don't think it was necessary to put it on the as part of the episode, like you just said. It just maybe kind of expounds on that time between then and then, but it's nothing necessary to advance, you know, the plot. I mean, something happens, he loses control and heads back to Earth. I mean, it wasn't necessary to advance the story.
I think it helps explain some of Rose's reactions to things in the episode. Because she sees him change. She sees him acting weird. She sees him out of control before they even get to the episode.
Yeah.
And so I think that helped me understand her impact of... He's changed, he's left me, all of that stuff, more than just the physical appearance.
She sees that at the end of Parting of the Ways. I mean,
not as much, but only the physical appearance.
Well,
I mean, he says one or two lines, and then
he goes through a couple of things, but yeah.
And he really, you can tell he's a completely different person.
Yeah.
I think that for me was what did it, was the David Tennant persona really took hold in that short little time frame. Because I took a couple of episodes to warm up to David Tennant. I was still not quite sure because I really liked Eccleston. And who is this guy? And he's like, well, I know this is going to happen now. I'm used to this.
Yeah.
There's going to be a warm-up period. And it wasn't until Girl in the Fireplace that I really latched onto him and thought, okay, I like this guy. But then going back and seeing this, because I was with you, I didn't get to see it in between. I went back and saw it later. Once I'd gotten used to Tenet and seeing this and how he reacts to things and talking about the mole on his back and just the rapid fireness of it, I think really kind of helps cement this is how this doctor's going to work. We're going to warn you up front that he's significantly different. Now, if you didn't already know that, but, you know.
He's a bit more manic than a little more manic. Than nine, yeah, yeah.
I thought it worked for that, so I don't know.
No, I think it does.
You guys seem in sequence.
I think what you, guys are saying merit. Yeah, I would agree. I completely mirror what you guys are saying. I'm just saying that if you never had seen it, it only expands on the that. Yeah, it doesn't take anything. I mean, it doesn't. You didn't lose anything going from one to the
it's
other.
It's not a major plot point.
Absolutely. So, yeah. But it was fun. I liked it. I was really glad they did something like that. I think I'd like to see them do that more. I know they've done Children in Need specials later on, where they've done continuation in betweens, but they've somewhere they've done just, you know, the first minute or brief opening sequence of the next season, and I'm always a little. I'm excited because I get to see new stuff, but it's going to be the stuff I'm going to see again, and I like when they go out of their way to make new stuff and make a
mini-sode.
Yeah, like they did for the Red Nose Day specials this year. I like them going above and beyond and making those that way. But yeah, so I enjoyed it. Yeah. It's a real good introduction.
It is a really good introduction.
It really is. And it helps you. It helped me really understand that this is truly a different doctor. It's not just a different body.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is expanded upon in the Christmas invasion. It's Christmas Eve, and high above London, the alien Sycorax are holding the Earth to ransom. The doctor must recover from his regeneration in time to save the human race from slavery.
Dun, dun, dun!
Ta-da. Which I find very interesting that the first episode for David Tennant is a Dr. Light episode.
It is pretty Dr. Light.
Because
he's
unconscious through most of the episode.
Yeah, about two-thirds of the way in until we finally get him gallantly coming out of the TARDIS.
Yeah. Which...
In his pajamas.
Yes.
In my gym jams. Rather Arthur Dent of me. Which I love that line.
Love
I thought that was great.
The Hitchhiker's reference in it, yeah.
Which, and it's funny, I'm reading a book... called Go Go Girls of the Apocalypse, and it's this comedy book, and he's holed up in a bunker and says he has a bunch of books on the apocalypse, and his favorite's about one of Earth being destroyed to make a
intergalactic superhighway.
Yeah. And so they didn't say it outright, but it was like, oh, that's a nice
that's
reference.
Definitely.
And then the next day, or no, not even the next day, later that night, I watched this episode after I read that.
Got another Hitchhiker's Guide reference. That's pretty cool. Serendipity follows us around.
Serendipitous.
Whatever.
I enjoyed this episode. It was a good introduction to David Tennant. I liked his monologue at the end a lot of what kind of person am I? Am I sexy? Am I
yeah
all of that stuff. Oh, look, a big button. What happens when I push the button? And what kind of a doc person am I? Will I push the button or not? I really enjoyed all of that. As far as a Christmas episode goes, it doesn't hold a candle for me to Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
this was the first one that was done specifically as a Christmas special. And I think all that we kind of touched on this a little bit is that all of the Christmas specials prior to A Christmas Carol were Christmas episodes because they were set at Christmas time and aired at Christmas time, but not necessarily.
I thought the whole Santas with horns for weapons was rather entertaining. I kind of chuckled at that.
Pilot fish.
Yeah, the pilot fish.
Yeah.
And then the spinning Christmas tree was almost a little bit...
The deadly spinning Christmas tree?
A little, almost too over the top for me.
Well, I had to have something for the Doctor to do to... save the family.
But still, I just don't know how I feel about the spinning tree.
Yeah, Sean just alluded to it, but anything in the Russell T. Davis era, I think it was just, I almost feel like a lot of times that Christmas was interjected into the story just for the sake of the fact that they were showing it on Christmas.
Yeah.
They say Christmas special, but it's not really like Christmas special like Rudolph or Frosty that we attribute to it as a Christmas special. It just happens to be on Christmas. It's big. In the UK, they always did epic television on Christmas night. That's what everybody, you know, did their stuff during the day, Christmas dinner, open presents, blah, blah, blah. At night, everybody sat down in front of the TV and watched big epic films. I think they used to show things like disaster films like Towering Inferno and The Poseidon Adventure and things like that. And so Christmas night viewing became this epic, you know, viewing night, and it was always epic films. And I think that was the approach they've taken with the Doctor Who specials, is there always seem to be grander, bigger, you know, global disaster, you know, impending doom. And so I think that's the reason why we get it. And it doesn't always seem to be necessary that it happens to be on Christmas Day, but they tend to do that.
So. Yeah. I did really enjoy all of the Doctor's interactions in this episode, especially with Jackie, that whole exchange. I need a... Shut up! that was really funny, and I like the introduction of Torchwood, or the reference to Torchwood.
Yes.
And the unit showing up again.
Yep.
And Harriet Jones...
Prime Minister. So great to see Harriet Jones back.
That was really
good. And I was a little upset that they, you know, because Harriet's such a great character and she's fun, and of course she's Sean's mom, and you know there's all this extra little stuff going on, and then they kind of turned her a little bit into this, you know, I don't want to say vindictive, but I mean it almost played out that way because she's very very concerned about the fate of England and humanity, and she flat out tells him, you know, Torchwood's for when you're not here, which is frequently, and kind of slaps him in the face with it, and it's like, lady. You got no idea what this guy has done for you. Don't do that.
But you also look at it from the point that she was at ground zero in the Slovene invasion. And she knew what an alien species could do, you know, at first contact if they were hostile. And I think it was a little unfair of her to, after the doctors already sent them running with their tails, you know, between their legs, it was a little... unnerving for her to do that, to go ahead and destroy the Sycorax, you know, at that point.
The doctor's comments after, I gave them the wrong warning. I should have warned them about you.
About you, absolutely, yeah. Another one of the elements I liked, what did you guys think about the blood type? That's how they were controlling.
That was interesting.
I thought that was kind of a neat concept. It never, I mean, at least in my sci-fi viewing, I've never ever come across any kind of idea like that before. I thought that was kind of a neat idea, how they had to kind of figure out why it's only these certain people that are being controlled, and then they find out that they all have the same blood type, and so the blood control thing was kind of a neat device,
I thought that was very, very nifty sci-fi. And I think that kind of lended an element of grounding to, I mean, when you've got robotic Santas and spinning Christmas trees, that kind of
because it's back a little bit. Well, because it's something organic. It's something that you know, everybody has. It's not so much mechanical, but
What were your thoughts on the sword fight?
I thought it was cool.
I enjoyed the sword fight.
I enjoyed it.
Especially when he gets his hand cut off and then it regrows.
I like that more than anything sets up the type of doctor that Ten is.
He's the swashbuckling,
get things done, and you get a chance, and then if you don't. You don't take that chance, then
he doesn't get second chances.
Exactly, I don't give you second chances, and I liked that. I thought it was very telling of what we're going to see as the 10th Doctor progresses through. Looking back now, knowing what I know, it's very foreshadows the type of Doctor that Ten will become.
I found it a little unnerving initially, just because. You're not used to seeing the Doctor pick up a weapon and go to town with it. I mean, when Christopher Eccleston picked up the gun in Dalek, and we're like, what are you doing? I mean, it was just, no, wrong. I mean, just there were all kinds of, which I don't know why, because he's totally a man of action. We've seen him do it before.
Seen a sword fight.
He fights
the Master with swords in Sea Devil. Now, you never get the impression they would ever run him through, but, you know.
No, but I just...
We have seen him
And he has no compulsion about building a giant death ray for the Merca.
I think it's always guns that are shocking to me, not necessarily anything else.
And it seemed to me that he picked up the sword as a last resort. He tried everything else.
Yeah, it was the last chance.
And so...
Now, on second viewing, I mean, it totally works, especially knowing what we know, knowing what we come to know, that this is who David Tennant's Doctor is. And it totally works. But just initially, I was like, oh, I'm not sure how I feel about it. And then, wham, the hand gets lopped off. And it's like,
well,
I mean, I was just a little dumbstruck. I didn't know where to go with that.
And I thought the same thing.
He regrew it. I was like, okay, that's kind of clever. That's a nifty way to write yourself out of that.
Well, it was a nice way to explain it because the regeneration process isn't complete.
Yeah.
So there are still cells that are regenerating. So, yeah, it worked. It was a clever explanation for how it worked as well.
And the fact that they kept it,
I think,
was really cool.
Don't go too far.
I'm not going to go too far with it.
He doesn't know much about that. So
I know it's an evil hand.
An evil hand?
Isn't that what they called it?
Did he?
Rose made some sort of comment about it afterwards, too.
I don't recall. I don't think it's an evil hand.
Well, maybe not evil, but...
Maybe she was making an Army of Darkness joke.
Maybe.
Well, regardless.
Oh, and the whole thing that... How he deals with Harriet Jones at the end.
Don't
you think she looks tired?
Don't you think she looks tired? She brings her down with... Six words.
Which is... I find that so interesting. Especially since Christopher Eccleston was so excited that... Oh, this is Harriet Jones. She's going to be Prime Minister.
Well...
It makes it seem like...
I thought that was also kind of weird, because he makes a comment that she had 3 successful terms as Prime Minister. And then it can't have been more than a year into her ministry that this happens. Although, I guess I've also heard people allude to the fact that she remained Prime Minister...
She bounced back from
for some time, but no, it didn't necessarily bounce back.
Mm.
But she was Prime Minister for 3 years, but it was a downward spiral for her. And then obviously there's another Prime Minister that comes along later, but we can't talk about that much either. But yeah, so I thought that was odd that, you know, Eccleston was so bouncy, and she makes for, you know, a great Prime Minister, 3 successful years, or three successful terms, excuse me, not years, 3 successful terms. And then suddenly, there's this turn of events, and it's clearly not even
maybe
her
that's
first
the problem
turn.
Maybe that's the problem I had with it, is because I remember thinking of Eccleston's words and how popular she was and how cool he thought she was, or how bowtie he thought she was. And then just all of a sudden turn on a dime like that, and, okay, you're done. You've had your warning, and now I'm done with you, too.
Yeah.
I mean, just, I kind of was sorry to see that happen. But
yeah.
You like Harriet, but...
I like Harriet Jones.
It was...
I totally think she made the wrong call.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
Although we get her redemption later on in the series as well, so...
She
gets... We get a revisit from Harriet Jones. There's just a little sneak peek for you.
Small spoiler.
That's right. Small spoiler, Keith.
But the highlight of the episode for me was once the Doctor reawakens. I mean, that's what stands out in my mind the most about the episode, is all of that last... sequence of and then the snow ash at the end.
Well, I thought that was a little bit of a weird concept, forced concept, but, you know, they're talking about the Christmas snow and it just happens to be the ash from the sacred ash.
It's kind of like
a little bit of a gruesome Christmas. Hey, look, snow. No, that's dead people. Dead aliens raiding on London,
which we just watched. Sunday nights we watch shows as a group. We watched the Misfits Christmas special. Sean wasn't able to make it because he didn't catch up.
I'm still behind.
It's a bit more gruesome than this one.
Is it?
Oh, is it?
Of course, it's a bit more mature of a show, so...
Well, again, you know, Christmas episodes don't necessarily mean Christmas specials. They
I think it might have been one of the most blasphemous Christmas episodes
I've seen.
And that tops Family Guy. So
now you've got me curious.
I'm intrigued. Yeah.
It was good.
Well, moving along,
anyways,
New Earth was next.
Yes, New Earth. In the far distant future, an order of cat nuns cure all illnesses. But the Doctor is suspicious of their methods. He must uncover the truth and save Rose from revenge of his old enemy, the Lady Cassandra.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which I found this episode really interesting, because it paralleled so much of Eccleston's second episode, of they travel into the future, this is past that time, and Cassandra's still alive, the face of Bo. I mean, there are so many elements in this episode that correlated directly to that second episode with Eccleston. I enjoyed it a lot on that aspect, and seeing more of the face of Bo and hearing more about the face of Bo, I really like that. And I know Glenn doesn't agree with me, but it's our first episode on an alien planet.
Yeah, terraformed Earth. It's yeah, so alien.
It's not Earth proper. I mean, you could say the same thing about any of the planets in Firefly. They're terraformed to be like
Earth. Yeah, and they weren't alien at all. They were like going to different parts of the Old West. That's the only thing I don't like about Firefly is that there's nothing alien about it. It's great adventures and great stories. It's a wonderful TV series, but there's nothing alien about
it. It's not supposed to be alien.
No, it's supposed to be Old West in space, yeah. Which is fine. But you can't use that as an example because that's
okay,
set
well,
up to that, be
that
way.
Might be a bad example, but...
It's like if in Star Trek, everywhere they went had trees and plants and cars. And I mean, they didn't. They went to different places.
Everywhere they went had the Vasquez Rocks.
Well, that's true. But at least they made an effort to make it look like a barren alien planet.
I just think because they point out the fact that this is a new planet. It's new Earth. It's not original Earth. It's
still terraformed Earth.
Terraformed Earth. And the fact that it's so far in the future that... There really is no human race on it anymore. Right. It still makes it, to me, feel like an... It's not... We're not dealing with humans. We're dealing with cat nuns and
giant faces.
Well,
we are dealing with
faces.
Humans because the population that was... They were using...
Well...
They were all humanoid. I mean...
They were humanoid, but the
Earthlings left anymore, I suppose. But there's humanoid races out there.
And anticipating this argument between
Homo
the two
sapiens.
Of you,
there were no Homo sapiens in...
There is a legitimate reason why we stuck on Earth throughout the first season of the new series. There's a legitimate reason why. I looked this up, and it's on the internet, so it's true. It has to be true. It's on the internet. There was a gravel quarry workers' strike. And all of the rock quarries were out of commission. They couldn't film there. So that's why there were no alien planets in the
All right, well, that's got to be it.
I can see that.
Okay. Not really. I'm making that up. I can't back that up.
I like the concept of Earth millions of years in the future. Millions, yeah. Yeah, millions.
Yeah, I don't remember what year it is.
Whatever.
That's like 1,000 years past end of the world.
Yeah, so... I like that concept. I like the fact that they've reformed Earth, that it's, you know, new Earth or whatever.
New York.
Yeah, exactly. So that was neat. I like the concept. I like the concept of a whole where it's, you know, they're using humans in order to...
Well, they clone humans.
Yes.
In order to cure all these.
Cure.
Yeah.
The, yeah.
So, I mean, it brings in a very interesting moral dilemma of... Are these people, are these beings actually humans? Are they actually? Oh, I mean, we come.
Are they living? Are they alive?
Are they sentient?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, it
does the ends justify the means?
Yeah, right. It brings in all these interesting moral quandaries that a lot of shows won't deal with nowadays.
Yeah. And the Doctor makes his decision at the end.
Yeah, he really does. He's
very clear on how that goes. I like the Cassandra element. I liked the fact that they.
Well, they took her off the trampoline
and
put her in the body.
Absolutely.
And some of those interactions was great, and Rose did a really good job.
I thought so, too.
Changing character.
I thought so, too. Cassandra. She was just, spot on as Cassandra and really acted the part very well. I like the end. I like the touching end.
Yeah.
I mean, even though Cassandra's, set up as this villain in the Eccleston episode.
Well, even for the most part of this one, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's still, it's almost a bit of a redemption factor for her as well. So, yeah, no, I like the ending. I'll tell you what, I think I alluded to this when we, what episode did we do where I said, the pig, okay, it was the pig alien, which was really a pig. It was a pig. It was a ruse so that the Sylvain could make the Earth think it had first contact, and it was a pig. All right, so now we've got cats as aliens, or as different species, evolved cats, if anything. But this starts a pattern of using. Let's get imaginative. We did such a good job in End of the World, where we had all these different alien-looking beings. And we've got the face of Bo, and we've got, you know, I don't remember all the different characters.
The blue guy.
Yeah, the blue guy, the trees. Let's be inventive like that. It's not so bad. It didn't grade on me here. It's going to be later when I'm going to keep bringing this up. Every time we utilize some animal, Earth animal that's been changed so that it can fit the, you know, the idea of an alien. It seems unimaginative to me. The costumes were great. The costumes were great. The makeup was great. They looked terrific.
They did, yeah.
But it just got a little old with me.
I'm not going to go into them, but I can only think of three, so I guess maybe I'm kind of lost on... You need to bring it back up and kind of hammer me over
there. Yeah, I will. There's at least four times total right off the top of my head.
Well, four times in, what, five seasons? That's not too bad.
No, yeah, but also we didn't see... Now, aside from the Ood, which you'll get introduced to later as well, but that was very imaginative, I thought. But anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent.
But because, I've seen you're right. The Ood, it looks like a squid.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great. Why you gotta feed it that? Why you gotta go there, man?
Or Chithaloo.
Now I have changed.
It's a humanoid Chithaloo. I mean,
I have changed. Yes, I have changed my view now. No. Anyway, so I'll get off that subject. Off that subject.
Well, we had cat people in Survival.
We did. Going
all the way back to.
We did. But there's 30 years of here. Yeah, 30 some years of history there. Where they did go, we had the Zygons, we had the Sontarans, we had the... I mean,
that's true.
Maybe this was
every
a return
once in a while
classic...
when you throw one in there. Monster. But this time you've got it's they're almost they start to outweigh the imaginative aliens that we have. We do actually get the new series anyway. Well, I'll get off that soapbox. It's really more prevalent later as we go through the series, but. What'd you think, Sean?
I really liked this one. I liked with you guys. I liked the fact that you know Cassandra was returning. Initially, when it was like, oh god, Cassandra's back.
Yeah.
But immediately, this is not the same Cassandra. This is not the same episode. Yeah. It was a totally different feel, and I liked her as a villain, mm-hmm. and then later as a sympathetic character in this one, as opposed to the first one. The face of Bo. Just, first of all, cool bow tie. He is such an interesting idea.
Yeah,
kind of the complete opposite of using cats and pigs and dogs and whatever.
Yes,
there's a giant head in a jar. Okay, it's Futurama, but I mean it's a giant head in a jar. That's just cool. And he goes on.
It's a giant alien head.
It's a giant alien.
Head
That's
the difference.
The dreadlocks.
You say sure it's Futurama, but I mean Futurama's always
human
heads, and they're small. They're normal human heads. They're just being preserved for I don't know some point to reattach their bodies.
He's just a fascinating alien, and then to give him the little bit of backstory here.
Oh yeah, it makes
not
me,
much, but a little bit
makes me want to learn so much more about him.
I know
him.
He's
and
just.
I really wish, honestly, part of me wishes he would have died at the end of the episode, so he could have told the doctor what he needed to tell him, so I could find out what it was.
This.
It felt like okay. They
it's
built,
been a difficult time.
I know it's horrible.
They built
it's so
this up.
Much. We have to hold back.
The whole
this.
Audience is out there going ah.
They built this moment up of he's going to tell this greatest secret to the man with no home, and that's the doctor. We all know it's the doctor. And then at the end of the episode, I decided to live after all. You showed me that there's worth living.
Push him off the cliff.
Push him out the window.
The thing with the face of Bo is that even in a mediocre episode, he shows up and all of a sudden the episode gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll definitely see that
down the
road.
Well, I know we're going to see him again because he said,
he'll see it in return. And that episode, I think, is definitely an indicator of that. But even with End of the World is kind of it's an okay episode.
Well,
but then the face of Bo shows up, and it's just way cooler for the fact that he's in it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel the same way about New Earth. I liked New Earth. I thought New Earth was a good episode. I liked the premise. I liked the cat people. I liked the idea.
I almost wish it would have dealt with the face of Bo more.
Yeah, that's just it. He shows up, and he just kind of overshadows everything else that's going on because he's such a visually an instant, and just he's just nifty. He's just
and
a
the
really,
fact that he's so old.
Yeah, somebody that the doctor can really relate to.
Yeah,
which is kind of unusual for him. But I liked the moral implications of, you know, do the ends justify the means? Can we grow humans and artificially inject them with all the bad stuff so that we can then turn around and create cures? you know, I thought that was fun. I loved David Tennant kind of rambling on and on and on about a shop. You need to have a shop. There ought to be a shop. I just, you know, what is he going on about? I just thought that was great. Yeah. I loved the sterilization procedures in the elders. A lot of physical humor in this one.
There was.
That I really liked. I question.
Well, and then when Cassandra goes into David the doctor.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was so
hilarious. Oh, I've got parts and they've hardly been used.
She really had some of the best lines. She did. Character, you know, yeah.
Cassandra lines. Just had a lot of fun. And I think the actors, I think they had fun with
yeah.
it.
Oh,
that
yeah,
too.
I think
you
so.
Can see that. But I question the validity of the cure. I mean, I loved the idea of it. Because it almost came across like Empty Child. Okay. Nobody dies today, right. and we're going to fix it. Pouring all the stuff together... maybe.
We just make this one big concoction, and yeah.
I don't know much. I'm not a science whiz, but I did take one semester of chemistry in high school, and I kind of sort of remember that being a bad idea.
It was a bad idea to mix that stuff together.
Yeah. But, you know, it's Dr. B. Well, let it slide. So.
Yeah.
And I loved the visuals on this one. I thought the hospital looked visually cool.
Yeah.
It felt like this was the first time that they went out and really... Maybe it's because it's a second season budget. Maybe there was a little more money there. It seems like the CGI, the cityscapes, and the things that you actually got to see, was just a lot better. The CGI on it was a lot better done. Done better.
It was a little more grandiose.
Yeah, it really was, and I liked that about it. And it gave it a real cool, slick feel and look, and even maybe more, I want to say, you know, epic or movie-like than the first season, which still felt a little television.
Which, yeah, and...
It felt like the first two or three seasons of Next Gen did, Star Trek Next Gen. You know, they feel kind of limited in their special effects, and then it gets better and gets
well.
You know,
and this is something, and I've said this before in regards to Aliens, but I think it kind of carries through with the character design. You watch a show like Star Trek, which, okay, we are going to go to a different planet each week, and you land on the planet, and yet, especially in the Next Gen Deep Space Nine Voyager era, yes, it's an alien planet, but everything still looks like... It's all molded from the same universe. And it just...
Well, you don't even see the outdoors much.
Well,
either.
But I mean, even though it's alien, and it's a complete... And they worked very hard, on, especially on Deep Space Nine, trying to come up with the Cardassian mentality to design a space station.
Absolutely.
But all the other aliens that they bump into, it just... Everything feels like it's coming out of the same prop shop. It's got a, you know, it's a familiarity to it. Whereas with Doctor Who... If you're on an alien planet, there's stuff that, and it may not make any sense to you, why is that there, but it doesn't matter, because this is alien, and they throw weird bits of junk in there, and I liked the look within the hospital, that like the medicine, you know, it's these big multicolored rainbow tubes of, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll buy that, because it was different than what you would expect to see in a hospital setting, and I thought that was really cool, and that's something I think where Doctor Who really excels, is just, I don't know how much time they really spend on it, but they just do different stuff no matter where they're going.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel the same to me, where so many other shows do.
I thought of this a little while ago, like maybe a week or so ago, and I forgot to bring it up last time. But I think this pertains to this episode, too. Who's the doctor to decide what's right and what's wrong? I mean, really, I mean, a lot of the stuff from Eccleston, he lands in a time period and says, this is not right. Who is he to say that time is supposed to go a certain way? Just because he's been to the future, who's to say that that's the future that it's supposed to be? That whatever Max from the space station didn't help form that future and the doctor interfered with it? I mean...
He's a Time Lord. That's, I think, at the core of it. Even though he's the last
who
one.
Who are the Time Lords? Who give them the authority to say what's right
about it? But see, the thing is, the Time Lords also discovered time travel, discovered a way to harness time travel. Rassilon and Omega were essentially utilizing the power of black holes in order to harness time travel. And whereas Rassilon was kind of the good and Omega was the bad, Omega wanted to... harness it and use it for nefarious purposes. Rassilon realized at some point that wasn't how it should be used, and so he essentially founded the Time Lord Society and they harnessed the power and decided to make themselves overseer of the time stream to make sure that, you know, things went correctly, and anybody that meddled with time, things were corrected and fixed.
And I think that's...
But some of the stuff, like Max, the Daleks don't count because they were meddling with time itself, right. But Max or an invasion that's thwarted off, that's... Who's to say that wasn't supposed to happen? Those people didn't travel into...
But who's to say that the Doctor wasn't there to make it not happen, too?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've always gotten the impression, and this is just my own personal... This is my own personal feeling about this, is that the Doctor always seems to be at the right place at the right time. He always seems to be in the right situation. And I've always likened the Doctor, and it works better once I started seeing Quantum Leap, is that Sam Beckett was always sent by, was it Ziggy? Was it the computer?
That, yeah.
That was always sent to a situation to fix it. And it was, and I, you know, as we got down the road, it was... Like Ziggy was God and was sending him to the
places. Well, Ziggy wasn't actually in control.
Yeah,
of the project,
well, exactly. I mean,
God or time or fate,
God
or
time or fate was right. Yeah. So I've always kind of likened to the fact that, you know, Sam Beckett was where he was supposed to be in order to fix events so that they went the way they went. I've always got the impression that, you know, we talk about how the TARDIS isn't necessarily organic, but it's a living essence or entity. Mm-hmm. I've always gotten the impression that the TARDIS, maybe that's why the Doctor doesn't always have control over where he goes and doesn't always have control over the TARDIS. It's almost like the TARDIS has a fate-like sense to it and places him in the places that he should be at certain times. And it's, and maybe that the fates or the time stream itself is putting him... Maybe he's the antibody that the, you know, the Reapers were considered come in and fix. Maybe he's, in a way, a type of Reaper that comes in and fixes. And he's not aware of that. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that he's... consciously aware of the fact that this is what happens, you know, as he's run from, because he's a fugitive in Time Lords too. He ran. He didn't agree with this stage
in the game too, where he is the last one. I think he's got two things working
for him. Now there's a lot of weight on his shoulders.
There's a lot of weight on his shoulders. I think for as much of the early seasons as he spent rejecting Time Lords and they're wrong and I don't understand why we have to do it that way,
right.
And my God, they're stuffy and just on and on and on. I mean, he was constantly bashing his own people. That's why he left in the first place.
Right.
Now that they're gone and he's witnessed the horrors of everything that's happened during that time frame, I think it's twofold. I think he feels responsible to carry on in whatever way he can the goodness that the Time Lords did still, because they did a lot of good
stuff.
They
did, sure.
Maybe they went about it.
There was corruption within the system, but I think the overall idea of the Time Lords was
it's a lot like the Senate in the Old Republic in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The goals were always lofty, but getting to them may not have taken the path they needed
down in the tape.
And I think he feels responsible for carrying that on. I also think there's just the dogma that comes with being a Time Lord.
Well,
this has been ingrained into him from birth.
There are times where he has a God complex.
Yeah.
He definitely does.
And I think that
it's like the Father's Day. Don't interfere, don't interfere. And then it's a do as I say, not as I do type situation most of the time, where don't interfere until I say it's okay to.
Right.
Well, they're, and it's weird. They've never, in my mind, they've never really explained sufficiently the idea of this is a time locked thing that you cannot change. This is an event that has to happen.
Right.
Versus this is an event that can happen.
Right.
And it seems to be depending upon what the script is going to deem necessary for this particular episode.
I think that's how it works.
And I'm cool with that. But there is definitely there are moments where it's like you cannot change this.
And you always,
but this is okay to meddle with because it's not supposed to be that way.
I agree that they've never explained that. They've never really shown you why certain events are time locked. I've always got the impression that I just trust the Doctor that he knows because he's been around for so long. He is a member of the Time Lord race, and he obviously has, you know, the knowledge to know when things can be changed, when things can't, and when time can be rewritten and time can't be rewritten. That's something we're, you know, exploring in the new series, in the most recent series. So,
I just thought that'd be an interesting point.
It's very much so, especially with a show like this, because there are moments that it's okay for him to... I told you, I've been listening to some of the audio adventures, and Paul McGann and Lucy, Paul McGann and his Sheridan Smith, his companion Lucy, they have a great one, the TARDIS lands, and she's like, is it somewhere spectacular? And no, it's the hull of a spaceship. And she's like, oh, not so much. And he goes, well, let's just have a quick look around. And she stops and she goes, you know what? I've got an idea. Let's not go look around. Why? Because you'll find trouble. That's how this works. You think I don't know this by now? Let's just get back in the ship and take off. And there was a part of me that was like, yeah, just go. I don't care what this problem is. Just, you need a vacation, man. Just take off. And he's like, oh, it'll be quick. And at that moment, giant centipedes burst into the room and take him hostage. And it's like, oh, darn it. So, but yeah, I mean, that's just, he's always manages to be in the center of things. Yeah. So.
I just thought it was an interesting thought. Would make thought
pretty
of
boring who, television if he didn't end up.
Yeah, well, I agree there. It kind of just dawned on me of who is he to say what's right and what's wrong and what's supposed to happen and what's not.
Wouldn't that be an interesting character tick for a future regeneration down the road? Not so much that he's neurotic, but just that he doesn't really want to go out that door because he knows what's going to happen. I think that actually kind of...
Well, you'd get the Jim Broadbent incarnation Curse in the Middle Deck.
And the companion would be the one going, come on, it'll be fine. Yeah. Let's go out the door and look.
Be a nice little turn, a little flip-flop on characters.
Well, speaking of not being completely in control of the TARDIS, the next episode I watched was Tooth and Claw. The Doctor and Rose have to protect Queen Victoria, but can anything stop the Empire of the Wolf? And this is another one of those things where, kind of like Vampires of Venice, werewolves and Doctor Who almost don't seem like they should mesh well. But they get it too. I found it very interesting that it's a alien disease, almost. Like an alien... It's an alien... Oh, what am I looking for? Single-celled organism that grows... Parasites. That ends up forming werewolves. And I enjoyed the episode. I am a werewolf fan, so I enjoyed it on that aspect. And then the sci-fi aspect of it, I enjoyed. And the fact that at the end sets up Torchwood, gives you an understanding of how Torchwood came to being. And the whole conversation at the end with Rose of, is the royal family now werewolves?
That's right.
I thought it was really fun. Yeah. And the way of him trying to figure things out and how to defeat this werewolf that there's no way to stopping. Bullets don't stop it. I really enjoyed the episode.
Sean?
I did and I didn't. There were elements to it. I think this one is maybe not quite as strong as the sum of its parts. There's an element to the, and especially this will happen more as we go on. This was kind of the first, it's the second episode in, so obviously this is going to be the period piece.
It's a period piece.
Yeah, I did notice that. It's episode three, period piece.
It's episode three of... Regimented almost.
His third, Eccleston's, or Tennant's third episode, yeah.
Yeah.
It gets a little cookie-cutter after a while, Keith, you'll notice.
I'm considering the Christmas Invasion episode one, because regeneration... And that's how it is on the box set.
I don't think it technically is.
No, it's episode zero. But it was Tennant's third episode. It was Eccleston's third episode. Trust me, there's a
Matt Smith's third episode was.
It's a cookie cutter, believe me. You'll see it through the. That's something.
And episode two travels far into the future.
Another issue that I have had problems with in the new series is that it feels very formulaic, and I think they got comfortable with how it works that way. And it does work, and I'm fine with it. I'd like to see them break the mold.
It almost seems that this next season it will, though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're starting out. We're starting out in a period piece.
We're starting out two-parter. So
yeah, that's right.
I think that will make a big difference.
But that kind of bothered me just a little bit. It was like, oh, it's the period piece one. Okay. I liked Queen Victoria immensely.
I thought she was great.
I liked the idea of trying to pass Rose off as a Scottish wild woman.
Yeah. Well, and you got the throwback reference as he refers to himself as James McCrimmon.
You know, I that registered, but I didn't. You'll have to.
That's Jamie. That's Jamie. Oh, that was Jamie's name.
I didn't know
in
that.
In the second Doctor's era, yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool then.
So he used James McCrimmon.
That's right. I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
I liked the accent.
Yeah, which is his accent. Yeah, that's
because the thing.
Yeah, David Tennant actually is Scottish, and so it worked for him. Yeah,
I liked the idea of the Torchwood Institute, the house kind of being the okay. Here's where we're going to get the thing. Now, again, as a Star Trek fan, this felt almost a little forced because they spent a lot of time in, I don't remember which season it was, of Next Generation, setting up Deep Space Nine. We're going to go here. We're going to have the Badlands. We're going to introduce these new aliens. There's going to be blah, blah, blah. And it was very formulaic that every so many episodes, boom, here's a reference to what's coming. And it's like, okay, we get it. This is one long commercial almost for what's going to happen. And the news
that
already broke.
That's what season two is.
We're going to get a Torchwood spinoff. So here's all the setup for it. And season two kind
of
felt like that.
Bad Wolf really feels like it was interwoven and was a mystery, and suddenly there's a payoff. Torchwood didn't feel like that at all. It just felt like they were forcing Torchwood into everything so that there was a payoff at the end, but also an advertisement for the new series coming out.
Which also brings up some very interesting time problems, because obviously if Torchwood's invented in Queen Victoria's times, it was still around when the Doctor was fooling around with UNIT in the 70s as John Pertwee. How come he never heard of it?
Yeah.
I mean, you would just...
Because it was that secret.
Well, but you would think that if this
maybe
is
it was
the guy,
decommissioned for a while.
If this was the guy who was in charge of all the scientific, explanations of everything, and UNIT were the people to go to because...
Yeah, but we're not sure if the UNIT was during the 70s or 80s.
Well, whenever it was. Whenever that strange time frame it was set, that they had cool lasers and whatnot. For whatever reason, you would think that he would have heard about it. And I was actually just a little bothered, because I'm thinking to myself, if you're going to create this agency that's designed to deal with alien menaces, you've already got that. It's UNIT. Let's just do some more UNIT stuff.
I thought the same thing.
Because I love UNIT. It can be a little repetitive, but, it's the Army. Yeah, well, I don't care. Bring UNIT back and do some more of that. But they do wind up differentiating themselves substantially.
They do. Yeah, absolutely.
And I like the Torchwood series, so I don't want to give the impression that I don't. But it felt a little forced here.
But Torchwood that we see at the end of this season is different from Torchwood that we see in Substantially.
Yeah.
So that's all I'll say about that. But it's, And they explain why that is. So
it's not just different.
Yeah, it's not just different.
And I really, really liked the inverse telescope.
Yes.
It was a little telegraphed.
It was a little kid-friendly, if you ask me.
Well, Yeah, that too.
Your body's 70% water, you can still drown. Okay, that works, I guess.
I thought the werewolf worked. I was kind of with you. I was like, werewolf? I don't know how this is going to go. But kind of the same thing. When they started talking about vampires all the way back in Warrior's Gate?
Before Warrior's Gate. State of Decay.
State of Decay. I did this last time, and in State of Decay, I was like, oh, vampires are late, but then it worked.
Yeah,
so it's just a matter of finding how to put the Doctor Who spin on whatever classic monster you're doing. Brain of Morbius.
Yes.
Frankenstein.
Yes.
So.
Oh, I was about to say, was there a Frankenstein?
There's
mummies later.
Brain of Morbius. Yeah.
Of course, those are robots. But
yeah, that's right. Pyramids of Mars. Robot. Egyptian gods.
No, it was Waters of Mars, wasn't it?
There's pyramids of Mars
and a Waters of Mars.
Waters of Mars.
Oh, I thought that was from new series.
No. Waters of Mars is new series, but there's no mummies in it.
Oh,
Pyramids is from Tom Baker's era.
Oh, okay.
But Waters of Mars is one of the scariest. I think it's
I don't Waters. Know. Oh, of the new series.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Of the new series.
I don't know why I thought there were mummies in Waters of Mars.
Well, because once you establish there's mummies on Mars, you pretty much got to go there now. But yeah, and there were a lot of elements that I liked to it. Overall, I thought the story was. It was okay. It wasn't my favorite of season two, by any stretch. You?
Could have been 15 minutes shorter. I mean, it just felt like they kind of stretched it out. It was a good... I liked the story. It was enjoyable. And again, I agree with you guys that I like the werewolf take on why werewolves, why the folklore, that there's actually scientific reason behind why these, folk tales end up, happening. I like Queen Victoria. I like the comedy of them. Do you think she'll say I'm not amused? Trying to get her to say I'm not amused.
I'll bet you are so not amused, right, Mom?
And then how she sort of turns it on them, where you guys are acting like you're having fun here, and this is a serious thing, and lives are in danger, people are dying. It just, it really...
I really like the fact that she exiled them.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I really like that.
It was cool to see him knighted, because it was a really, oh, finally, some recognition, go doctor, and now get the hell out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I liked that. Did anybody else feel like the monks were, like, there and then not important anymore? It was like they were this huge thing, and they were setting it up, and it was going to be something a little more nefarious, and then they guarded the
exterior, and that was it.
And the whole first half, it felt like Die Hard. You've got this group of terrorists that have infiltrated, and we're getting everything set up, and we're fortifying the bunker, and we're getting, you know, and then they're not there.
Yeah,
it was like, what happened to the monks?
Yeah, it just that kind of, which, in essence, if you wanted to cut your 15 minutes of the film, you could cut the 15 minutes of setup. I mean, other than they're the reason why everybody gets,
I guess we can just presume the werewolf ate them.
Yeah.
And that's why they went around after that.
Yeah, so...
Well,
no,
they
did
get outside.
That just seemed like they set that up and then it just kind of fell off. And so, just the whole martial arts monks, that was a bit out there for me. But I was fine with it. I didn't have much of a problem with it. But no, overall, it was good. It was not definitely unlike you. It wasn't my favorite episode of the series, but it was fine. It was good. It was a good filler, good pacer.
Yeah.
I like the idea of where the name Torchwood comes from.
Yeah.
Even though it is a way to say, you know, a commercial to set up the series that's going to spin off. I did like the idea of the fact that it's the Torchwood Estate and that's where it comes from. So.
I love the fact that it's an anagram. That's just the coolest thing.
Moth Drawler. So far, I'm enjoying Tenet.
Good.
Still not replacing Matt Smith yet, but I'm only 3 episodes into Tenet. So, and if our listeners and you guys remember when we first started Eccleston, I said it felt very British. It just had that British, almost PBS feel to it.
It does PBS feel. Even though 70% of programming on PBS is not British,
I know,
PBS feel.
The British PBS is called BBC, by the way.
Thank you. No, but it just had that... It didn't feel international. Mm-hmm. It felt British.
Yeah,
it felt English-centric. So far in David Tennant, of course, that's only 3 episodes, but I think I said this in the first 4 episodes of Eccleston... I don't feel that in Tenet so far.
Okay.
The tonal and the way it's shot and the pacing of it, I think, makes it feel more like just a normal show, like any show.
And that's interesting considering he's only been off planet once so far.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't so much the locations. It wasn't so much the locations of where things were taking place. It was just... The tone and the way it was shot and the pacing of the show made it feel foreign, where, as an American, it feels foreign, whereas now it doesn't.
I was just struck with the whole... I can see the arguments in other podcasts, and I haven't listened to them, but I'm sure they've had them, a Doctor Who movie about all of the people in the UK. It felt so foreign. I just think that's funny. I'm sorry.
I am looking forward to watching more David Tennant, but...
Well, we've got a lot more to go.
A lot more to go, but
3 seasons, it's going to have to wait a week, because next week we're going to do our Sarah Jane Companion Archive.
We love you, Sarah Jane!
We've already watched Robot, as we
alluded.
Yeah,
we did. We watched Robot on Friday. We're going to try to get Time Warrior.
That was actually a funny. I wanted to delve into that for just a minute. There was actually a funny story with this, because I put out on the website, these are the ones we're talking about watching, we're looking for some good Sarah Jane. The poll was released, and overwhelmingly, Time Warrior was just, you guys hammered on it. We were like, okay, we're going to do that. None of us own Time Warrior. So we sat down Friday night, and we thought, well, we'll watch Invisible Enemy, and we'll give him the introduction to K-9. To which, Glenn, now I had loaned Glenn my copy of Invisible Enemy, I don't know, a month, maybe a month and a half ago.
Back when we watched The Silurians.
It hadn't been that long.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It was a while. At any rate.
Right when he got it.
And Invisible Enemy is one of my favorites.
I cracked a seal on the Invisible Enemy.
I know. I hadn't
it wasn't even open yet.
And Glenn's like, can I borrow it? I'm like, well, yeah, I've seen it. It's one of my favorites, so I want Glenn to see it. He says, I don't know if I remember it. It's been a while, blah, blah. Okay. Have you watched it? No, I haven't even opened it yet. Did you know it's still sealed? Yeah, I just bought it. I haven't had a chance to watch it. So he's going through, and he hasn't watched it, So then I send out the text message.
He goes like a month.
And we're, you know, what do you guys think about doing Invisible Enemy and maybe...
I never saw you say Invisible Enemy. That's why.
That was in the email.
Oh, I missed the email, I guess.
Well, admittedly, you had other things going on.
No, that's true. Yeah. But, anyway, go ahead.
So, you know, and Keith and Sarah, Mel, everybody's like, yeah, okay, let's do that. We'll do Invisible Enemy. And it's only 4 episodes, right? Yeah, I checked. It's only 4. No 7 episodes this time. Okay, great. So then Glenn comes over and we talk about it and he's like, oh, I just watched that. We're like, what do you mean you just watched it? He goes, yeah, I opened it up and watched it just the other day.
I ran out of Doctor Who in my house. I had watched everything I'd bought recently. There it was sitting there in its pristine cellophane packaging going, watch me. And I picked it out and I thought, I think I've seen this. I put it in. I hadn't seen it, so I watched it.
And so
I would have watched it again Friday.
I know, but I don't want to do that too. And here's the other thing. So then the other episode we talked about is Hand of Fear, which we found at the library, and I'd rent it and take home. And Mel and I watched it last week. So then Keith says, what about Hand of Fear? And I'm in the same boat as Glenn. I was like, I just watched that one. And I'd watch it again, but...
With Invisible Enemy, you said you weren't that impressed with it.
I wasn't that impressed with it.
Don't even get me started on that. We'll talk about that when we cover Canine. But... So we wound up, you know, since we didn't have Time Warrior, and we're like, well, we want to watch Sarah Jane, but we don't want to watch Hand of Fear. We want to give him another episode beforehand. We went ahead and watched Robot, which we will discuss, but we're still going to go back and try and work Time Warrior.
And as a matter of fact, Adam was, you know, suggested that we watch Robots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
which we had, and that was.
I'd forgotten how much Sarah Jane actually is in Robot. It actually is.
Yeah, well, I had forgotten how much the Brig was in it.
Yeah.
In fact, that was kind of not hard to watch, but just, you know, I had this heavy weight on my chest watching the Brig again, because that's the first thing I really sat down and watched from beginning to end since Nicholas Courtney died.
Yeah.
Courtney died.
So we wound up watching Robot, and we still had a good time and a lot of fun, as we do every Friday night. And I'm kind of envious now, because I'd mentioned this before. With our group, it feels so much like the old PBS nights, when you sit down and you flip on KCPT, and there's Doctor Who, and it's Friday night, and the show's starting at midnight, and we're getting ready, and here I'm going to stay up for 3 hours and watch Doctor Who. This is going to be great. They're doing Doctor Who Bar now on the Twitter feeds, where they get together on Fridays and watch a Doctor Who episode. Is it Saturday?
I thought it was Friday. I think it's Saturday.
Oh, well, whenever they do it, and they're watching a Doctor Who episode and then tweeting back and forth. And I'm thinking to myself, the sons of bitches stole our idea. that's what we do.
Except we just are in the same room.
Yeah, well, you know. But it just, like I said, we had a lot of fun. We will get Time Warrior worked in, though, right? We're going to try.
I think we're going to try to get that. We got a whole another week till.
I think we will.
And we've got Robot out of the way.
We've got Robot out of the way, so we'll try to get Hand of Fear, Time Warrior, and maybe Pyramids of Mars if we have the time.
And if we get there, we
still want to try and do Canine and Company then for the Sarah Jane.
Well, I just watched it too, but yeah, I mean,
does Keith need to watch it? I don't think it'd be a better question.
Well, I mean, it pairs Sarah Jane and Canine up. It's only about 50 minutes long.
Are we talking about Invisible Enemy or Canine?
No, we're talking about Canine, which, you know, they're both on the same box.
I know they're in the same box. Okay,
yeah, we're talking about Canine and Company because Invisible Enemy introduces us to Canine, Mark One. Sarah Jane or Canine and Company introduces us to the relationship between Sarah Jane and Canine, because Sarah Jane was not around when Canine was with the Doctor.
Right,
and he leaves Canine with Sarah Jane as a present.
So we kind of get that set up of how she gets Canine in Canine
sort
Company?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
It's a box,
with
Canine
at her aunt's house. With a note.
Well, that's all the exposition I need.
It's very, very much like, hey, look, there's Doctor Who. But there's no Doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no TARDIS.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's Sarah. I recognize her. So
and a really hip 80s.
Oh, opening theme. You made us watch the opening. Oh,
Canine.
It's gonna be Glenn's new ringtone.
Yes, I'm making that my ringtone tomorrow. Canine. Anyway.
Even I'm the world's biggest Canine. I love Canine. Even I thought, my God, this is horrible.
It was so hokey.
It's Merca bad. And there's just Sarah Jane, and maybe it was because, and you'll get used to this when you start watching some Sarah Jane episodes, the wardrobe choices for Sarah Jane were really bad, and she very much had this girl next door quality to her. And there were a lot of episodes where she almost dressed like a child. And then in the opening to the K-9 Company, she's sitting here drinking wine, and she's got her hair all done up. It's like, what is this?
Yeah, absolutely.
What does this have to do with anything?
It looked like the buddy cop show.
That's it. It really looks like the opening to Riptide or something like that.
Oh, I loved Riptide. Screaming Meanie. There's an 80s reference for you if you want to go look that up. But
anyway, well, I think that's going to do it for this week.
I think so.
That's what we're looking forward to next week, and
we'll get something up on the thread about what we are officially going to be reviewing next week. Yeah, we still don't know at this point,
it'll
be Sarah Jane centric.
You're following along, and who did you say watched something recently?
Chrissy tweeted that she was watching Invisible Enemy.
That's right.
I thought to myself, honey, I hope you're not doing homework for our show because we may not get to it.
He doesn't have any David Tennant now this week to watch.
Right.
So give him Invisible Enemy.
I took it home Friday, so if you get to it, you get to it. And Hand of Fear to get to.
Like I said, K-9 Company is only about 50 minutes long. It's a decent story. It's a one-off. And
we've got to track down Time Warrior, though. So
yeah,
we can do that.
I think Time Warrior is the important.
I think it's a must.
Yeah.
Especially since we met Jeremy Bullock this
week. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Serendipitous. See, I used your that. Yes. Anyway, well, I think that's going to do it for us. So I guess until next time, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.